Hello, everyone. Here we are again, Super Bowl Sunday. I'm always teaching on Super Bowl Sunday, which is totally fine with me because I have no interest in the Super Bowl. But it's always fun on Super Bowl Sunday to see who came to the room anyway. You know, who who also does not care that it's Super Bowl Sunday. So happy Super Bowl Sunday. What I will be doing, what I do during this time slot is I share from my 7 Steps journal. And so that's what I'm going to be doing for the next hour. And in fact, we're going to start with number 473. So what I'm doing right now is giving a link to number 473 in the room for anybody who wants to join me in the journal. For those of you who may be listening on the radio, the link is RDA7, that is the digit 7, it is not spelled out, RDA7stepsjournal.wordpress.com. Once you get to the website, if you look either up on the menu bar at the top or on the menu on the right hand side, find step 2. And then underneath step 2, find the numbering sequence that will allow you to find your way to number 473, because that's where we're beginning tonight. And what I would like to do before I get started is just take a moment in silence. So please join me. Amen. All right, so what I always do is I begin by reading the quote from the book, The 7 Steps to Awakening. For those of you who don't know, The 7 Steps to Awakening is nothing but a collection of quotes from Advaita Vedanta masters. And the way this works is that I contemplate one quote at a time until something comes from within me. You could call it my guidance or my clarity regarding the quote. So what I'm going to read to you is the quote 473 from the book The 7 Steps to Awakening. This would be what I contemplated. And then we'll go look at my journal and look at what I wrote. This quote originally comes from the Supreme Yoga or Yoga Vasistha. And this is the quote. This universe has no form, no body, no materiality, though it seems to have a form. So, again, this universe has no form, no body, no materiality, though it seems to have a form. All right, so now we'll go to the 7 Steps journal, number 473. I'll go ahead and post the link again. A couple people may have come in since I did that before. And this is what I wrote in my journal after contemplating that quote. Like a mirage exists, the world exists. Of course, a mirage does not actually exist, although it can be perceived. The same is true of the world. I used to have a big inner problem. And by that I mean I felt a contraction in my chest. So like a physical contraction in my chest. I used to have a big inner problem whenever I would hear another course student say, the world does not exist. And the reason I had that contraction, that problem, was because, of course, I believed that it did. And it kind of seemed like the biggest lie that we could tell ourselves. that the world does not exist. And so to hear a Course student say that, it created this contraction in me every time I heard it, the world does not exist. Well, what we call Holy Spirit, or what I call inner wisdom, has worked with me very, very gently for a number of years. And the very first step it took to help me with this, well, first of all, because I had such a large contraction when I heard the world does not exist, whenever the Holy Spirit in my mind spoke to me, it didn't say it in exactly that way. It would say the world is not real. For some reason, I didn't have the same contraction worded that way as I would have when I heard the world does not exist. So what I often heard was that the world is not real. But then Holy Spirit went on to define for me what real is. And of course, what isn't real? Real would be eternal or enduring. Real is, well, in the beginning it was defined for me as without end. That was the initial definition I was given, without end. And so with that definition of real, I could then look at the world, the personality, the body, and say, that's not real then. If the definition of real is enduring, well, then clearly these things are not real, because they obviously can, and certainly in the case of the personality and the body, will have an end. And I lived with that for many, many years, that acceptance of the fact that the world is not real, the body and the personality are not real, because they are not enduring. When I got into the seven steps to awakening, and I got into step two, the inner wisdom came back, and it began to show me again that the world does not exist in another way. It started off by showing me what I can confirm as true and what I cannot confirm as true. And it showed me that the only thing that I can confirm as true is my own beingness, isness. The fact that I exist. And when I say I exist, I don't mean as the personality or the body. But the fact that existence is, and that I know existence because I directly experience it. That's the only thing I can confirm. It showed me through a series of inquiries that I cannot confirm that the world exists. This is how it began, by showing me I cannot confirm that the world exists. And it really showed me that I cannot confirm that the world exists because I do not directly experience the world like I experience my own beingness or isness. The world is experienced through five senses. I see the world, I hear the world, I touch the world, I smell the world, I taste the world. And it's experienced through a mind that vastly interprets all of the sensory data that it receives. And as I came to clearly see that the world is not directly experienced, I then came to a point where not only could I say the world is not real because it's not enduring, I could also say I cannot even confirm that it exists because I do not have a direct experience of it. Now what the seven steps is doing is the seven steps is beginning to show that even though the world appears to have a perceptual existence, that does not imply actual existence. You know, obviously before I would have thought that perceptual existence implies existence. But an average everyday example is being used here, a mirage. A mirage has perceptual existence, which means I can perceive it. And I can, you know, gather people around me and say, do you see it? And they can all say, yes, I see it too. It has a perceptual existence. However, if we all start walking towards it, we know that we're never ever going to reach that mirage. It's going to vanish before we get there. So it doesn't have actual existence. So of course, that's what this contemplation is pointing at. Like a mirage exists, the world also exists. It has a perceptual existence. Of course, a mirage does not actually exist, although it can be perceived. The same is true of the world. All right, so let's scroll down and click on number 474 underneath the comment and reply area. Or for those of you who are not yet in the journal and would like to be, I will post a link in the room. I'll start by reading the quote, 474, from the book, The Seven Steps to Awakening. Again, this is Yoga Vasistha speaking. You imagine that I have a body. It is on account of this notion existing in you that I produce this sound known as speech. You hear it even as a sleeping person hears sounds in his dream. So, you know, we may have had the experience in this lifetime. Some of you may say, yes, I've had that experience where you're sleeping pretty soundly, but you're in a dream, and somebody comes into your room and attempts to wake you up from the dream, and at first you actually experience them in the dream talking to you. So at first you don't realize they're outside of the dream talking to you. You experience their voice in the dream. And so he's really saying this same experience here. This is, you know, Yoga Vasistha, the guru, saying, I understand that you perceive me as having a body. I understand that, you know, at the end of this conversation, you will see me get up and walk away. You may see me go and bathe, you know, in the open bathing pool. You may see me go and eat. You may see me go and sleep. But in truth, I'm not in the dream. That is you who is dreaming that applies all of that to this voice. You know, sometimes we hear course students say, if you are in a body, you are not awake. What this is saying is, no, that's not necessarily the case. If you perceive me in a body, it means you are not awake, the perceiver. The voice, the speaking that we are hearing, the knowledge that is coming to us, could very much be coming from awakeness, is what this is saying. Could be coming from awakeness. We're the one that gives it a body and gives it sound and makes it a part of the dream. So we cannot judge awakened wisdom by whether it's coming from a body or not. We need to judge awakened wisdom or discern awakened wisdom based on, is this the wisdom that I recognize? Right? Is this the wisdom itself? So again, Yoga Vasistha says, you imagine that I have a body. It is on account of this notion existing in you that I produce this sound known as speech. You hear it even as a sleeping person hears sounds in his dream. During my period of life when I, you know, called myself a scribe and I was writing things like the Holy Spirit's interpretation of the New Testament and the messages with Laurent and the teachings of Inner Ramana, all of that, there was one time. Well, first of all, for those of you who don't know, my experience as a scribe was hearing, not really hearing a voice, hearing a stream of inner thoughts that did not seem to be mine. So there would be a stream of thoughts that would begin that did not seem to be coming from me or my thinking. And they were coming at a speed that I could write them down, like taking dictation. So my experience was hearing a stream of thoughts. I called it a voice, but it had no sound to it. There was one point when a message came from this apparent voice telling me that at a level at which the scribe is not conscious, the scribe actually puts the words on the silent vibration that is the communication. That there is no actual words. And of course, the scribe isn't consciously making up the words. You know, she really feels that she's hearing them. But at a level at which she is not conscious, because she believes in words as communication, she's the one that's putting the words on the silent communication. Again, that's the same as what we're hearing right here in the Yoga Vasistha quote. You imagine that I have a body. And then the second sentence, it is on account of this notion existing in you that I produce the sound known as speech. So it's on account of my belief in words as communication that the communication came as apparent words. Right? And in fact, also in NTI, it does say that Jesus speaks best when there are no words at all. In other words, there is a complete silence that communicates. It doesn't require words. And in fact, I did come to where I began to notice that. It came to a point in the scribing process. How do I describe this? I felt the communication. This happened towards the end of the Thoughts of Awakening. I felt the communication. I still received it. I wasn't thinking it up. I felt the communication, and then I consciously put the words to it. I could tell that I was matching words to what I knew I had received. I don't know how else to say that. It's the best way to describe it. I'm not sure it actually communicates it well. I've also noticed, now that I'm, you know, for whatever reason, losing my brain and I can't think well, I've noticed that sometimes I know very much, I don't have any words in my head at all. I know very much what I want to say to a person. I'm not at all at a loss for what I want to say, but I can't find the words. I'm like searching, trying to find the words to communicate what I want to say. And so, because I do know what I want to say, but I have absolutely no words, I know that communication from my own experience has nothing to do with words. It's just how we communicate in the dream. And so, as a result, many of us hear words from Jesus or Holy Spirit, but that's not the actual communication. That's what we put on it because of our dream beliefs. And the same, we are told, is true of what appears to be an awakened being in a body teaching. We're the ones that put the body there. So, let's go ahead and see what I did with this after contemplating it and writing in my journal. Number 474. Beingness, isness, is not without communication, although it is without form. That's the sentence I wrote, but you can see how everything I just said agrees with that sentence. There is absolutely communication, even in my own mind as a human. Now that my brain is growing weak and my brain is beginning to not be effective, I will know what I want to say to Danielle or Jasmine, for example. But I have no words with which to say it, and I have to stammer and struggle for the words so I can get my communication out. And what's interesting about it is there won't even be pictures. You know, there's no form. It's really rather amazing. It kind of makes me grateful that I'm losing my brain so that I can understand this. There's no form, and yet there's a clarity of knowing what I want to communicate. So beingness, isness, is not without communication, although it is without form. We do not really need the teacher. We do not really need the words. Direct communication does not involve any of that. And yet it is very clear communication.
Hi, Jamie.
All right, so let's scroll down and click on number 475. Hello again, my love. Yeah, I'm having a little trouble. Hold on one second. My dog likes to hit my arm with her nose, and so it's hard to, like, click on a mouse and stuff when she's doing that. She's communicating without words, but with form. Form hitting me with her nose, trying to say, I'd rather you pay attention to me than the computer right now. Okay, number 475 from Yoga Vasistha. I'm reading from The Seven Steps to Awakening. The diversity perceived in a dream does not create a diversity in the dreamer. Even so, the notion of a creation does not create a division in consciousness. Consciousness alone is no creation. The dream mountain is the dreamer, not a mountain. So when he's referring to the dreamer here, by the way, we're used to the language, you know, the dreamer of the dream from A Course in Miracles. But actually, when Yoga Vasistha is talking about the dreamer in this particular sentence, he's talking about when you're asleep in your bed and you're dreaming. When you're asleep in your bed and you're dreaming, you know, you may see trees, you may see other people, you may see hallways. You know, if you have that naked at school dream, you see lockers. But the fact that you see all of these things in your dream does not create any type of separation between you and the dream. You know, the mountain that you see in your dream is just you. It's all just your mind, right? We all know that. Well, he's saying the same is true in what we experience as reality. He's saying it is all just consciousness. Now, actually, just this moment, I realized that I preferred the word consciousness. I up until now, I had no partiality to that word whatsoever. It's just now it communicated in my mind in a completely new way, which I will try to share, that is extremely helpful. And so now I am a fan of the word consciousness. When we talk about the dreamer of the dream in A Course in Miracles community, and we say, you know, everything is a projection of your mind, you are the dreamer, and we're using the word you. The mistake that inevitably happens more often than not is that the listener already equates the word you with me, the body, the personality. So if someone says to me, this is all just your projection, this is all just in your mind, right? You are doing this. What gets heard and believed, although it's completely untrue, is that I, the personality, am projecting this. And what we miss often is that the personality is actually a part of the projection. The reason that is miscommunicated to us is because, first of all, we're not receiving direct communication. We're receiving indirect communication from a teacher or from a book. And we're getting it through words, and we already have an understanding of the word you. You means me, body, personality. As a result, we totally misunderstand the teaching. Consciousness, the way he is wording it here, is actually much more helpful, at least it was to me just now the way I heard it. The diversity perceived in a dream does not create a diversity in the dreamer. Again, this is talking about the dreamer asleep in a bed. Even so, the notion of a creation, meaning the whole world, the whole universe, the notion of a creation does not create a division in consciousness. Consciousness alone is no creation. Consciousness alone is, communicates to me differently than you alone are. When I have the idea that you means the body and the personality. consciousness alone is. It says that even what I think I am is a part of consciousness. What I think I am is a part of consciousness. It's not that what I think I am has made the world. And that is actually much more clear. Let's go ahead and see what I wrote in my journal after contemplating this. Number 475. Who cannot understand that everything seen is the eye that sees it? So who cannot understand that everything seen is the eye that sees it? This is an inquiry. And the answer to the inquiry is, the eye who sees it cannot understand. The dreamer cannot understand the context of the dream. Can the dreamer then have any power in undoing the perception of the dream? Again, the answer is no, no power at all. How is the perception of the dream undone? A seeing that sees through the dream undoes it. How does this seeing undo the perception of the dream? Simply with seeing. So again, the world is not the projection of my mind. And in that sentence, my is Regina. The world is not the projection of my mind. And in fact, my mind, as I experience it at a human level, is actually a part of the projection. All of the thoughts that come into my mind telling me what I like and what I don't like and what I think is important and what I think is not important and the whole thing that makes up the personality construct is a part of what the Course would call the script. It's a part of the projection. My mind does not make the world. My mind is a part of the projection. This is what the Course calls level confusion. So there's no way that I, this personality mind, no matter how much metaphysical knowledge I seem to acquire and understand, can undo the perception of the dream because I'm a part of the dream. The undoing comes about by what I'm going to call wisdom seeing, what is sometimes called clarity, and what in A Course in Miracles is called the Holy Spirit. There is a wisdom seeing that is still a part of us because it is what we are. When we do not engage my mind, my thinking, my learning, my understanding, right? When we do not engage that, and we allow seeing to be because the mind is not engaged, that seeing is what undoes. Now, the Course calls this sometimes the right mind, which is a fine term, except because we already have an idea of what mind means, we still think it's thinking about my mind, my right mind. That my doesn't have a right mind. We abandon the my mind. We abandon who I am and what I think and what I care about. And by abandoning the personality and abandoning that mind, the seeing that is natural without that mind sees. And it's that seeing that undoes the dream. Often this is called grace. But the question is, you know, at this level where I perceive myself as a body, mind, personality, is there anything that I can do? Or do I just have to wait for grace? And what I hear over and over and over again is the one thing that you can do, and it has many different words, do nothing, become the empty shell, surrender, abandon the personality, stop trying to think and figure out. All of these words are describing the one thing that apparently we can do, which is stop believing that I'm the person, stop putting meaning on the person's thoughts and the person's ideas, back off from believing I'm that. Let go. If the person is a projection of consciousness, what is it that allows the person to have seeming or apparent existence? You could say, what enlivens the person? Wouldn't it be consciousness? I mean, if you think of a leaf on the ground, a dry leaf. A dry leaf has no life to it. It's just a dry leaf on the ground. But when the wind comes along, the wind can blow that leaf and make it dance across the street. Is the leaf dancing across the street, or is the wind blowing it? Which one is more true? It's the wind blowing it. The leaf cannot dance across the street. It has no life. The same thing is true of the body personality and the my mind. It has no life. What makes it appear to have life is consciousness. When the decision is made, even if it's only made for a moment, when the decision is made not to be wrapped up in the body personality as who I am, when the decision is made to let go of believing these thoughts, what you're left with is consciousness and its clear seeing. And that's what undoes the illusion. I don't know how else to say that. Hopefully, in some way, it was understood. So it's seeing without thinking, seeing without trying to figure out, seeing without trying to understand. It's just the seeing itself, which is like the wind underneath the leaf. And the eye that wants to understand how this could be, that's the eye that has to be abandoned. That's the dead leaf. All right, so let's scroll down underneath 475 and click on number 476. Some things sure are hard to talk about. Number 476 from Yoga Vasistha says, the world is an appearance and not existence. The world is an appearance and not existence. Let's look at the journal. Existence is being. The world is perceived. Therefore, it is not existence. And this is something I talked about at the very beginning of the hour. So I'll just do a quick review here. You may be mistaken about what you are. You may think you're the person, mind, you know, body. Which is why when you hear the world is a projection of your mind, you think it means, you know, the person's mind, and you try to somehow correct it at that level, which ain't never going to happen. But even if you're completely wrong about who you are, the one thing that you know, and there's nobody can ever talk you out of it because you know it with absolute certainty, is that you exist. Maybe you're not the person you think you are. Maybe you're not the body. You might be able to see that. But you know you exist, and there's no way I can tell you that you don't exist. You couldn't even have a complete misunderstanding about what you are without existence first. Just like the leaf cannot dance across the street without the wind. Existence is the fact, or isness, or beingness, or awareness, or consciousness. These are all words that are used to label that same fact. That you know. That's the one thing you know. The world, you can't know with the same certainty. You may see a world, you may be able to reach out and touch a world, taste a world, smell a world, you perceive a world, but you don't know it like you know existence. It's perceived. And there's a big difference between perceived and the direct knowledge of existence. One is a fact, the other one, at best, a potential fact. So existence is being. The world is perceived. And then this goes on to say, therefore, it is not existence, because existence is only that direct experience. All right, so let's scroll down underneath 476 and click on number 477. Number 477 from Yoga Vasistha says, what is unreal is unreal, even if it has been experienced for a long time by all. What is unreal is unreal, even if it has been experienced for a long time by all. Again, when this inquiry process in step two of the seven steps started for me, one thing that I was asked from within to do is to follow this process with honesty beyond human honesty. Honesty beyond human honesty. And the reason for that is human honesty can totally agree in honesty on something that's completely not true. It just means it's a shared illusion. So in order to go through this process, I needed to be willing to go through the process with honesty that's beyond human honesty. What is unreal, even if it has been experienced for a long time by all. Let's look at number 477 in the journal. The fact that everyone agrees the world is present here, now, does not verify the world exists. It only verifies the perception of it. Again, the existence that we know, the existence that every one of us experiences, that I am-ness, as has been written in the room, That's an absolute fact. And unless you're completely foolish, I could spend all day trying to talk you out of the belief, because it's not a belief, trying to talk you out of the belief that somehow something in you exists. And there's no way I could talk you out of it because it's not a belief. It's a fact. What may not be a fact, and in fact is not a fact, is who you think you are in your existence. But the existence itself is a fact, and you know it. You couldn't even be wrong about who you are if there wasn't something there to be wrong. Right? There has to be something there existing. That you know by yourself. And, you know, the other 6.5 billion of us could tell you over and over and over again that you don't exist, that you don't exist. And the best thing that would ever happen was that you might be confused. What are they talking about? Because you know you exist. So even if all 6.5 billion of us came together and agreed that you do not exist, you somehow know that's wrong. The fact that we all agree on it doesn't mean anything. Because you know you exist. So the fact that people agree on something does not make it true. You and I could pick out somebody in this room, any person at all, and we could agree. There's something about them that is totally not likable. And you and I could agree that there's something about that person that's totally not likable. That doesn't mean we're right. This is probably one of the biggest human flaws, is that when we get together and we agree on something, we think it means that we are right. And that's not true. It just means that we are agreeing on the same perception. Does not mean that our perception is right. Well, that's also true of the world. Even if we all agree, yes, the world is here. Even if we all point at the mountain that you can see outside my window, yes, that's Pike's Peak. Yes, that has snow on it. Yes, there are stars in the sky tonight. Yes, it's colder tonight than it has been lately. Yes, even if we all agree, that doesn't mean that any of that is true. It only means that we perceive it that way. And perception is much less than direct experience, knowledge, fact. Much less. So the fact that everyone agrees the world is present here now does not verify the world exists. It only verifies the perception of it. We can scroll down and click on number 478. Number 478 from Yoga Vasistha says, neither in the waking state or in dream is there a real world. Now here, real world, of course, is not being used the way it's used in A Course in Miracles. A Course in Miracles refers to a world that is based on a perception that is truer than the ego's perception. It calls it true perception, and it reflects truth. However, even A Course in Miracles says the real world is still a dream. This is saying there is no world that has actual real existence. No world that has actual real existence. Neither in the waking state or in a dream is there a real world. So let's look at 478. This is an inquiry that started as I contemplated this quote. Is a world perceived? Yes, this is beyond doubt. I know I perceive a world, right? I have my hand around a cup right now. I know I perceive a world. If being is the only proof of existence, is the existence of a perceived world beyond doubt? The answer to that is no, it is not beyond doubt. Now, in this lifetime, I have had the experience of being an apple. And of course, an apple is a part of the world. So if an apple exists, then the world must exist, maybe. All right, let's look at this a little deeper. So I've had the experience in this lifetime of not only being this body that we call Regina, this personality mind that we call Regina, which I typically experience myself as, I have also had the experience of being an apple. I legitimately and honestly had that experience in this lifetime. But this is what's important. That does not mean there is a world. That does not mean there is an apple. Because even in the experience of being the apple, there wasn't a direct experience of being it. The direct experience was beingness itself. Isness, the same isness I experience now. The isness that seems to be here as I experience myself as Regina is the same isness that was present as I was temporarily experiencing myself as an apple. What changed, in one moment I appeared to be a human, and in the next moment I appeared to be a fruit. But what didn't change was the isness, the beingness, the awareness, whatever you want to call it. That which is so damn naked, I can't even tell you how naked it is, but if you know it, you know what I mean. That did not change at all, and it never has changed. It's been the same when I seem to be a 5-year-old girl as now when I'm a 52-year-old woman. Even in the experience of being an apple, the direct experience wasn't being it, the apple. The direct experience was beingness itself. Now, when I was the apple, I didn't see myself as a fruit like a human does through eyes, through the senses. You know, when we look at an apple, we see typically a red fruit, sometimes a green fruit. We see it, it's round, right? When I was the apple, I didn't have the human brain and the human senses. I did not experience myself as a round red thing. I experienced myself as only light. Just like now, if I look down at my body, I see a female body with a blue shirt on, a blanket on my lap. But when I was an apple, I did not see myself, because I didn't have human eyes, I did not see myself as a round red thing with white on the inside. I only perceived light. I was light. But even the light was somehow perceived, and I can't explain how. I can't explain how it was perceived, because, of course, there is no brain. There are no eyes. I can only say that it was. I perceived light. But the direct experience, the only thing not perceived, is the same thing that is the only thing not perceived now. My, what I call my beingness, the isness itself. Beingness, isness itself, is the only direct experience. Everything else is perceived and fleeting, which is why literally one night I had the experience of being a human and then an apple, which really was an experience of perceived light, and then a human again. That's fleeting. But that there was something that was constant. That I is what I am. And in fact, my gratitude for that experience was that I learned two things through the experience, which up until then were not directly known. They were only either read in books like A Course in Miracles or heard in Scribing Thoughts as NTI was being written. I learned that the world is not real, that it's only the human that sees an apple as a round red thing, that actually an apple sees itself completely differently. So there's nothing that we see or perceive that's real. That is done through the brain. or through the mind, which the brain is a projection of. But the other thing that I learned, which was even more important to me, was that there is an I. That I is not human. That I is not thinking. But it exists, and it's what I am. I learned who I am through being an apple. Because by being an apple, it was easy to see that I am not a person. Of course, I'm not an apple either. So let's scroll down underneath 478. The video, by the way, is here for those of you who might want to watch it later, where I describe the experience of being an apple. If you scroll underneath that, you'll find number 479, and you can click on number 479. Number 479 from Yoga Vasistha says, when sleep has ceased, the world appearance rises. Meaning when we go to bed at night and then we wake up, when we wake up, we see a world, right? When sleep has ceased, the world appearance rises. When that ceases, there is pure consciousness. That nothing which remains after everything has been negated as not this, not this, is pure consciousness. Now, some people are scared of the word nothing, you know, because we're so used to being something, you know. Of course, we primarily perceive ourselves as a body, but even at the point of death, we still perceive ourselves as a mind. Again, the interesting thing about the experience of being an apple is when I was an apple, I did not have in any way a human thinking mind. And that's something that you may not be able to imagine because you don't know anything but a human thinking mind. Maybe. Maybe some of you have experienced non-mindedness, so you do know what I'm talking about. But if you've only experienced, if you're in your memory, you've only experienced yourself as a human thinking mind, you have no idea what it is to be without mind. But as an apple, there was no mind, because an apple doesn't have a mind in that way. An apple does not have a mind. But even then, even as an apple, there was some kind of perceptionness, some kind of mind, a different kind of mind, a fruit mind, that a human doesn't have. Because the apple's perception of the world was different than the human's perception of the world. What that means is both the human perception and the apple perception are not true. Because truth is changeless. So what was changeless? What was constant in both experiences? That is clearly known. It's easily known. But that cannot in any way be described or put into words. Other than I can say it was what I am. Those are just words. You could think I mean the mind when I say that. Nothing is a good way to describe it, because it was before everything that we think of as something, even before mind, before a perception device of some sort. And yet, even though it's nothing, it is absolutely everything that I am. It is whole and complete and not lacking. It doesn't have any ideas of lack. And it's the truth and the reality of what we are. Number 479 says, now I'm looking at the journal. Well, let me read 479 from Yoga Vasistha again first, then we'll look at the journal. When sleep has ceased, the world appearance rises. See, there's a perception through a mind. When that ceases, when there's no perception through a mind, there is pure consciousness. That nothing which remains after everything has been negated, not this, not this, is pure consciousness. Okay, so let's look at number 479. Only one thing passes the test of beingness versus perceived, and therefore, only one thing is known to have reality. That is beingness, isness itself, and that is all that can be said to be that which I am. Everything else is fleeting. And again, I think the example of the apple and the human is the best example that I have from this lifetime, because they have nothing in common. Being an apple is nothing like being a human. It was not a human experience in itself as an apple. The human was completely abandoned and there was only an apple. And the two have nothing in common in the way that they are. But then there was this background that was present for both experiences. That is the only reality. That is the wind that makes the leaf appear to dance. All right, let's scroll down underneath 479 and click on 480. I will read 480 from Yoga Vasistha. In the vision of the knowers of the truth, there is nothing other than the pure and infinite consciousness, and the objective universe is completely and totally non-existent. So those who truly know the truth, those who are fully aware of the isness, the beingness, as the only reality, all they know is that. And in that way, there is nothing but pure consciousness, and anything other than pure consciousness does not exist. Number 480 in the journal. What is real? Only that which is real. Can the unreal be said to exist? No. No more than a mirage can be said to have actual existence. Again, we can all agree, all of us, that there's a person sitting here talking, and there are people sitting elsewhere listening. But when we all agree on that, we're only agreeing on what we perceive. And in the moment that we're all agreeing on that, we're not paying attention to the one fact. It's like we're looking at a mirage. But when you pay attention to the one fact, when you really give all of your attention to the one fact, it is so clear and present and real and obvious . Well, it leaves you speechless, as you can tell. But it leaves you wondering why you ever thought that anything else mattered. Because the perfection and the untouchability and the non-changeability of the one fact is so clear, so obvious. It's clear that nothing touches it. You can't touch this. Nothing touches it. It's clear it's the only reality and everything else is a mirage. Other things come and go. Emotions, thoughts, objects, lifetimes, but they never touch the isness. They are a total mirage to it. They have no effect whatsoever. And this is where the peace that passeth understanding comes from. This is the real that cannot be threatened. This is what we are. All right, we'll stop with number 480. I'm going to go eat chicken pot pie. And you guys have a great evening. Thanks, by the way. A lot of people skipping the Super Bowl. That's pretty dang cool. All right. Bye.